Hi, fellow Middlers. Hope you're doing well today. It's a beautiful Sunday evening here where I am in New York. And welcome, Bill.
Hey there, Yusuf. Hey, everybody.
I just am very excited about today's episode, which we're going to focus on a recent census that's done. So it's a demographic snapshot of South Asians in the U.S., and that's perfectly in line with our interests, Bill, and today's show is going to be about the census, talking about the interesting aspects of it, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, same here.
So how I stumbled upon it was there is a cool blog called Sepia Mutiny, S-E-P-I-A-M-U-T-I-N-Y, and there's a blog post called Desis Are Everywhere. That's how I stumbled upon the census. And then when I clicked on the demographic snapshot on that blog, it took me to SAALT, an organization called SAALT or SALT. And that organization on their website has posted the census, which is which was originally done by the Asian American Federation. I'm saying this because I think a lot of our Middlers would want to know where we got this information and where they can access more information about South Asians in the United States. So with that said, one of the first things that actually struck me was at the beginning of the census, it says, between 2000 and 2010, the South Asian American population became the fastest growing major ethnic group in the U.S., and has emerged in new areas of the country. So I was very surprised, and Bill, you and I were talking about this earlier. We thought that the Latino population was the fastest growing ethnic group in the U.S., and so it really took me by surprise. How about you, Bill?
Yeah, I was definitely under the impression that the Hispanic population was growing the quickest of any demographic in the U.S. So, you know, it may be the way that the numbers are crafted and the way that it's approached. I had not heard that, that South Asians were actually growing at a higher rate. With that said, I think South Asians may be more statistically meaningful because I think, as we all know, there are a lot of folks coming into the U.S. and the Hispanic population and may actually be a bit under the radar of the census, right? So that may be a function of that. But, taking it for what it's worth, you know, it's kind of interesting. When I started reading the statistics, a few things jumped out at me that were kind of interesting. So, you know, with the ease of relationships that I form with South Asians, even as late as last week, was talking to a coworker, Sangeeta, at a gathering after work at a pub. And generally, there's a series of cities that are named as kind of where you find a lot of South Asians, certainly the D.C. area, certainly the greater New York metropolitan area, the tri-state area. Dallas, Atlanta, and L.A. seem to figure a lot as well. And I think this is largely true, but one thing that jumped out at me is the fact that there are certain places where there are quite a few South Asians, and perhaps not as predicted. So it's of particular interest to me. One statistic I was reading, Yusuf, that the highest South Asian population growth in the U.S. is in Charlotte, North Carolina, where it increased nearly 200% over the past 10 years. And I lived here during that 10-year period, so I've seen that phenomenon. But I was a little struck by that. It was quite interesting to me.
Yeah, and then the up-and-coming areas being, I think, Phoenix, and there's one other area that I can't locate right now, but that was the Phoenix area being an emerging area for South Asians was a little bit of a surprise to me. So the biggest increase was 187% in Charlotte, North Carolina, like you said, but then there's Phoenix, Richmond, Virginia, Raleigh, North Carolina, San Antonio, Seattle, and Stockton, California, Jacksonville, Florida, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and Las Vegas. So that was very interesting. I want to go back to the beginning of the census bill, and so I'm looking at the fact sheet here, which is, I guess, a consolidated version of the overall census, and it says asks a question. It says, "Who are South Asians?" And this is so close to the to the audience for this Midler's podcast that was really exciting for me. So it says, "The South Asian community." So who are South Asians? They're the South Asian community in the U.S. That includes individuals who trace their ancestry to Bangladesh, Bhutan, India, the Maldives, Nepal, Pakistan, and Sri Lanka. The community also includes members of the South Asian diaspora, past generations of South Asians who originally settled in other parts of the world, including Africa, Canada, the Caribbean, Europe, the Middle East, and other parts of Asia and the Pacific Islands. So it gives an idea of how vast and deep and extensive this diaspora really is.
Yeah, I'll share a personal anecdote based on that. It just came to mind as you were mentioning it. So, a few colleagues, when I was working at my prior company, a few of my colleagues were from the Caribbean, from Trinidad. And, you looked at the last name, and a gentleman I worked with was named Ali, Alli, pronounced that way, completely American, really more Caribbean in terms of his ancestry. Came to find out that he was South Asian, and you couldn't necessarily tell based on his appearance. So it's very much an interesting phenomenon to find out that that diaspora has been in existence really for a couple centuries some places. So let me tell you a quick story. On Super Bowl Sunday, friends of ours, the Gangadhars, actually had a they're just back from India after 4 years over there. He was a colleague of mine while over in India, and they're staying in an apartment while they look for a home, and their apartment complex has a really nice clubhouse in the middle. So as the evening progressed and everyone had a few beers and the game was going on at halftime, I decided to approach a group of Indian wives, the women, if you will, a large cluster, and walked up and started trying my Hindi. Of course, got the typical reaction, a lot of laughs and amazement and that kind of thing. One woman came up to me later and said something else, and I thought it was Hindi, and I said, "Kya?" Didn't quite get it. And then I realized she was speaking Afrikaans, which is a
Wow.
Dutch language from South Africa, and she had heard that I have a nodding familiarity with that language as well. And she was from Durban, actually, and her family, a Tamil family, had been there for, I think, 4 or 5 generations as well. So this phenomenon of Desi diaspora is a big one. And this census actually cleared some misconceptions on my part, expanded my understanding, and certainly deepened my knowledge of kind of how things are moving in the U.S.
Yeah, another quick tidbit about this is there's a magazine called Little India, and you can access it at littleindia.com. They say they're the largest Indian publication in the USA, and so their last issue, I believe the February issue, talks about Indians in re on Reunion Island. So Reunion Island is where a lot of Indians were taken as workers and as slaves by the French over to this island several decades ago, maybe over 100 years ago, and they were actually their culture was taken from them, and so they although they do practice Hindu rituals, but they don't really know the meaning of them, and they don't understand really. They're not as connected to the meaning behind the rituals as people, let's say in India, are. But they continue to uphold their culture that they tried to preserve as much as possible. And now recently, they have wanted to be more of a part of India, and I believe wanting Indian nationality along with their French. So a very interesting story and another example of how extensive and expansive the South Asian diaspora is.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So the other thing that jumped out at me, and the obvious question is, how many South Asians live in the U.S.? And, you know, I personally would love to get these same statistics out of Canada and also out of Europe, so that would be fascinating for me. But in the United States, we have 3.4 million South Asians, and Indians are 80% of that overall population, followed by Pakistanis, then Bangladeshis, then Sri Lankans, then Nepalis, and then people from Bhutan. And so 3.4 million is quite a lot. And so Indo-Caribbeans, the population we were talking about earlier, there's 66,000 in the United States.
Hmm. You know, it's interesting. That is, I think that must be just a shade over 1%, right, of the entire
yeah.
U.S. population?
Yeah, sounds about right.
And it's as I look at the map on Sepia Mutiny, there's pretty much a radical drop-off of any South Asians. And candidly, I think there's quite a population dip in these states. But if you look between, let's say, Chicago and Las Vegas,
mm-hmm.
Pretty much none until you hit Seattle, the Bay Area,
yeah.
Las Vegas and L.A. So the middle of the country, there's not all that many South Asians. Although, as we were reading some other statistics, Yusuf, some in Indiana, right? And they fit into another group of statistics about lifestyle and integration and affluence. And there's a lot more variety in that than I would have anticipated as well.
Yeah, so to complement this, as I mentioned, this magazine called Little India earlier, they have a really neat, and this one's focused more on Indians as opposed to all South Asians. They have really cool stats on Indians, including where most of the armed forces veterans live, where the Indians with the poorest English skills live, where the most educated, most native-born, most naturalized live, where the most divorced and separated live, where the largest families are, the smallest families, where, for example, they have 7.5% of the Indians living in Pennsylvania they live with their grandchildren. The most single Indians are in New York at 31.5% of all Indians in New York are single. So for those of you looking to meet other prospective Indians for relationships, New York is a place to be. Then surprising, and now to your point earlier, surprising Indiana, 31.2% single Indians, and then Missouri with 29.6, and overall in the U.S., 26.3% of Indians in the U.S. are single, never married.
Right, never married, okay.
Never married. And then here's an interesting one. So of the Indian population in the United States, 0.4% are living together. So living with an unmarried partner, I found that really interesting. Indiana has the highest, 1.3%. Wisconsin, 0.8%, and Arizona, 0.7%.
So we can take from that it's still relatively rare to, in older English terms, to live out of wedlock in the South Asian community, right?
That's right. That's right. And so the other interesting statistic is the most divorced Indians, and the divorced and separated, they've categorized that together, are in Florida at 6% of the overall population, Indian population in Florida, 6% is divorced. So I don't know what that says about Florida, but I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, you know, one thing that was missing here a little bit, so I'm not a novice with understanding the South Asian community, but, I mean, let's just be frank, I'm not South Asian, right? My familiarity with the culture is certainly enhanced over most other white Americans or Caucasian Americans. But there's still certainly some mysteries and maybe even some misconceptions on my part. So I would think that a lot of this growth, especially that statistic about married and not married, I would think a lot of this growth is, mostly male but some female, between 20 and 30, as of yet unmarried, working in a job at a Fortune 500 company, delivering technology. I would have thought that that was a larger contingent, but in reality, it's really citizens that are comprising the high percentages of growth, people that are actually staying here, making their life, and choosing citizenship, where the non-citizens, and the statistic I was looking at, the non-citizen growth is much more modest, actually. So, you know, based on the fact I've worked for one of those companies and am in technology as a career, you know, one of my misconceptions is that a tremendous amount of this growth is from folks from Cognizant, Tata, Infosys. And in reality, it's that plus a heck of a lot more.
That's exactly right, Bill. And then, so I am very interested in how many of the South Asians that we're talking about here live alongside, in close proximity to extended family. So once people have made a decision to live in the U.S. and settle here, I'm wondering how many have been successful in bringing their families over. You know, my guess would be that in the New York, places like New York and the D.C. area, which have seem to have the highest D.C. populations, so there's number one for all of these populations, Bangladeshi, Indian, Nepali, Pakistani, and Sri Lankan, is New York, the number one place where they're concentrated and where they're most of, except for the Bhutanese population, which are most in Dallas. But this, I'm pretty sure that, you know, New York has a large percentage of South Asians, the largest percentage of South Asians who actually live with extended family, in close proximity to extended family. And I'd love to find out if other places, for example, the Indianas and the Colorados that also have, and the Missouris that have a South Asian population, I'm wondering if people are less likely to be living with extended family. So, and that goes to, for example, there's a Somali community in the United States, and their concentration is in Minneapolis, and get this, Bill, in Lewiston, Maine.
Maine, yeah.
Yeah. So,
I know about that one. That was, and that was like a decisive decision on the part of that community to take in refugee families, right, to become diverse. And
well, I think they originally took in some, but based on the nature of how Somalis travel and live and settle, I mean, there is somewhat of a tribal mentality. So, and there's relationships. And everyone's related in some way, shape, or form, and so they do travel in for lack of a better term, tribes. And I'm wondering if South Asians are similar.
Well, that's an interesting twist on the question as well. So here's an observation on my side. So grew up in New England in the 70s and 80s, and as I think I have shared on another podcast, grew up with one South Asian guy in our town. And Danny Thomas, a Carolite guy. And over time, you know, my wife and I were big fans of Indian food when we were dating, and certainly met folks from South Asia, and generally picked up on the split between the, which I guess is codified as the Dravidian people and the Aryan people of South Asia. The Aryan being a word that puts hackles up in most Americans, but it's not, has nothing to do with a lot of those connotations. Seems to me, Yusuf, that the number of folks in that Indian percentage, which I think is 80% of the overall 3.4 million, is that what we said before?
Mm-hmm.
So I think the number of South Indians is increasing in percentage pretty rapidly. I think a lot of Tamil folks and a lot of Telugu folks especially seem to be coming here, where if I rewind the clock back, I think a lot of Sardar community folks as
yeah.
well as a lot of Gujaratis were here. So I don't know that that's the case. Nothing in the statistics tells me that, but I think that there's a shift within that South Asian community. And based on going out to restaurants while on business and back here in Charlotte, there are people from the northeast of India, which are extremely new to the U.S., And I think, candidly, I would not have identified them as Indians a mere 6, 7 years ago before I spent time over there. So I think there's a lot of diversity in this statistic, is I guess my point.
Yeah, there certainly is. And the Keralite community and the South Indian community, you know, I'm wondering if there's more of a blend of how communities interact. Because I do know initially, I moved to the United States in 1986 to California, and then I was soon afterward came to New York. And back then, if you saw anyone who remotely looked like he or she was South Asian, you know, they would stand out, and you would most of the time make an effort to strike up a conversation and share that commonality. At least I did. Now I see, and my friends growing up in college, my South Asian friends, we had a good mix of Bangladeshi, Pakistani, Indian, within that Gujarati and Punjabi, and some South Indian as well. But now I think people are tending to live and interact with more of their kind in terms of ethnicity within the South Asian community, so they have a choice. And I believe most people, given a choice, will stick to their own type of people. So there are Keralite organizations and Gujarati organizations and Pakistani organizations, and even within Pakistanis, there's organizations based on and affiliations based on ethnicity. And I'm seeing that as more and more of a trend.
Yeah, I bet. So Yusuf, let me ask you a question, and you give me your perspective on this. This statistic seems to imply that South Asians are overwhelmingly in urban areas. Is that a valid statement?
So I don't know how valid that is. So are you getting that from a specific place in the census, or?
Well, I'm looking at the total population of the six South Asian groups by metropolitan area, and that word metropolitan area really jumped out at me.
So
and I look at Oklahoma, I look at Utah, and there is a presence there, but the density is lower. So let's say densely populated suburbs on the periphery of a larger metropolitan area or in the city itself, which is to ask, what about rural America? What about small town America?
Uh-huh.
You know, if I reflect on my experiences, I would see a Chinese or a Japanese restaurant in the smallest of towns, but not so many Indian. And that's one very easy way of discerning where people have migrated to. So is that valid, or what do you understand?
You know, that I think you hit it on the head. I see, and this is anecdotal and just experiential. That I haven't seen any research on this, but really, for example, in Chicago, I didn't find a lot of Indians and South Asians living in the city itself, but in the surrounding areas like Schaumburg and a few other suburbs, there are a lot of South Asians. And in New York, you won't see. Living in Manhattan itself, you won't find as many South Asians, but in the outskirts in Queens and Bronx and Brooklyn, you'll find many. But really, it's New Jersey, which is an adjacent state in the suburbs of New Jersey, is where you'll find a lot of South Asians. So you're right, metro areas, even in the D.C. area, you'll find them in Virginia and the Falls Church, Alexandria, Fairfax area, you'll find in those suburbs, you'll find a lot of South Asians. In fact, they're one of the larger concentrations of South Asians, and that's where. And I think it's because of work. I think in New York is essentially, I think, the first port of entry. So a lot of South Asians come in through New York, and they tend to stay here and eventually move out to other greener pastures, so to speak. But that is how they're concentrated and how they live.
And also, I think that we would agree. I don't think the statistics in the census spoke to it, but my understanding is that level of education among South Asians in the U.S. is higher than the general population, right?
Yeah. So there are two things that stand out. One is level of education, and the other is also income. But the level of education, I think, in the 60s and 70s, the people, South Asians that migrated to the United States were mostly professionals, as opposed to the ones that migrated to, let's say, Europe and England, et cetera. So that they had a head start there. The migration in the 90s, a lot of migration in the 90s were people who weren't necessarily highly educated. And as our podcast with Muntasir from SAYA, South Asian Youth Action, suggested, I think in the late 80s, 90s were when a lot of the lesser educated South Asians came and established a life for themselves here in New York, at least. I did want to point out two specific cities that are anomalies and very interesting to me. So one is Yuba City, California. They have a history of Sikh families and a Sikh community. In fact, the largest or second largest parade in the U.S. happens there, and that's based on a Sikh festival. And they have been there for quite a few decades, and they came as farmers. And that, I think, is a fascinating community. And if you want to look them up on Google and check out the statistics there, I think it's very interesting. The other interesting city is in Michigan. It's, I think, called Hamtramck, Michigan. And interesting enough, one of the SAYA graduates, South Asian Youth Action graduates, is a councilman there. And there's a huge Bangladeshi contingent in that particular city. It's a small, it's actually a small town called Hamtramck, I think. And I thought that was a fascinating story.
Yeah, did they go there for industrial jobs at one point? Or
I don't know, and I have to look into that more. Maybe we can have that councilman on our podcast, because I'm really interested to know what would take people there. Because South Asians generally, I mean, if it's a business that takes them somewhere, that's one of the reasons. One of the other reasons is the weather, and that's why they mostly gravitate towards California or some of the other warmer states. But I was really surprised Michigan was in there. So it may very well be jobs.
I noticed that on the census as well. That was interesting.
Yeah.
So Yusuf, if suburban / urban is more the experience for South Asians in the U.S. than anything else, and if still remaining, and actually your description of the change over the decades of who is coming from South Asia is something that might in and of itself be a great subject matter for a future podcast. It occurs to me 3.4 million is a pretty modest number, so it's still within the margin of error in any electoral contest. And the reason I bring it up is you may have noticed, right, we're in an election year right now, and there's a large tendency to speak of big swaths of the population collectively, the female vote, the African-American vote, the Latino vote. And somewhat editorially, I'll just put in that I find it, I would think more people would take exception to the notion that one's ethnicity or gender is determinant in terms of how one votes. But I think there's probably something to that. With all that pushed aside, there's not a lot of talk about a South Asian vote because, again, you know, 1% is not going to make that much of a difference in a national election. And that's where usually a lot of that ethnic voting bloc phraseology comes out. But here's my question. Of what significance is it as the numbers grow and the trend lines show that South Asians in the U.S. will continue to grow? What's the significance, from your perspective, of the Obama administration reaching out to the South Asian community? I think they actually tapped Cal Penn. Do you know him, the actor?
Yep, I do.
So I found that interesting. It was kind of a headline. It kind of came and went, but I thought, very interesting, and certainly an interesting ambassador, someone who's become a more serious actor over time. But in the beginning, I said, the guy from Harold and Kumar?
That's right.
But certainly right now, a bit of a change. So as Desis in the U.S. relate to larger national elections, where do you think that's all headed?
So one of the things that came to mind in terms of Indians and South Asians and their activity in the political scene. So the governor of Louisiana, Bobby Jindal, comes to mind, and then Nikki Haley comes to mind. And Nikki Haley was actually born Namrata Nikki Randhawa, and she's a governor of South Carolina. Both happen to be, I believe, Republicans, and so they are really very prominent as far as South Asian political presence is concerned. And Cal Penn, you mentioned, and there are a few other people, I believe, also of South Asian descent within the Obama administration on key posts. I couldn't name them by name offhand, but they're there. I think South Asians, relative to their population, have an inordinate amount of influence and also desire, especially people who were born here of South Asian descent, to be active. Like I said, the councilman out in Michigan, and there's several other stories of South Asians wanting to be politically active. And I believe going forward, because of also the purchasing power and the median income and the level of education, South Asians are going to have an inordinate amount of influence in American politics.
Yeah, I definitely believe it. You know, again, perhaps subject matter for a future podcast. So living in the South, although I'm not a Southerner, Nikki Haley and Bobby Jindal, it doesn't strike me as surprising at all that they did so well here, because I think that there is an overinflated and at this point somewhat archaic notion that Southern people are inherently bigoted and would not vote for a non-white or anyone of South Asian descent. With that said, it's of note that both of them became Christians at one point in their life. And I would not posit anything so cynical as to say that was a political move. But it is of note, and it's something that that I kind of paid close attention to figure out a little bit about kind of how they got where they got.
Absolutely. It's a fascinating topic. It's very interesting. And like you said, it'd be great to explore this in future podcasts. But I really enjoyed this discussion about this 2012 census. I'd urge our listeners to actually go to SALT's website, SAALT, and check out the census. And it'll be an interesting dinner conversation, and I think very enlightening for all.
Yeah, definitely. And I've enjoyed it as well. I appreciate you bringing it up as a potential topic. You know, for folks listening, in a lot of cases, you're going to be a South Asian and you'll be in the U.S. In all likelihood. So we're talking about you, right? So these statistics are essentially speaking about your experience and the experience of those close to you. So I also would highly recommend combing through it. It's been very fascinating. It helped me understand that I am in the epicenter of South Asian growth in Charlotte, North Carolina, which I found.
There you are. There you are. All right, Bill, it's been great, as always, and I'll talk to you next time.
Yep, sounds good. Thank you.
All right.